Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, a silver pro chasing gold, Michael Hinderocker.
Kind of sounds so dramatic and, you know.
Wait,
sounds
so
much cooler that way, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, dramatic. I thought you said traumatic. I was like, what was traumatic about it?
I mean, it can be traumatic.
Yeah, I mean, if you, like, don't day two this pro tour, like, that could be traumatic. Or, like, if your plane crashes on the way to Japan and you die, like, that would be traumatic.
And dramatic.
Yeah, that's true.
Not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive.
I also probably would not day two if I died before the pro tour started.
Yeah, it's like a two-for-one, right? Like,
yeah,
you don't day two the... Yeah, you didn't get gold and you died.
Oh, man. That just sounds so bad.
Sounds the most medium. All right. So this, don't forget to check out our sponsors at Oasis Games. Oasis Games will never crash a plane into you or while you're on a plane because they're not a plane company. They're a card company that sells magical cards. You can pick them up at npgoasis.com. Yeah, your smile right now is like unreal. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good? There's no spaces in that. Just Would That Be Good? And I think it would be good. I think buying cards from Oasis is great. You should definitely check them out. You can also check out our other sponsor at the Mana Base. They have awesome MTG content there going up all the time. They're a great content website. You can check them out at the Mana Base. They really are amazing. So we appreciate both of our sponsors. And you guys should definitely check them both out. We also have an announcement, which we'll also get at the end of the show. But I just want to plug the other shows on our network. So Constructive Criticism is one of two podcasts right now that are on our website. We have Constructive Criticism and Limited Time Only, two podcasts about getting better at Magic the Gathering. We're also going to start a third one coming at the end of July. It's called Common Knowledge, and it's a Pauper podcast about getting better at Magic the Gathering. Following, you know, with all the puns that you get in our names between Constructive Criticism and Limited Time Only, you know, Common Knowledge will be hosted by former co-host of Constructive Criticism, Manny Merez, and a new host, Kyle. So definitely stay tuned for that. We're really excited for it. We also now, both of our podcasts have their own RSS feeds that are hooked up to iTunes. So if you could, please go subscribe to those on their own feeds, as well as leave us a review. The reviews really do help us on iTunes, and it means the world to us. So once again, don't forget to check out our sponsors, and that's kind of the updates. So let's go into the other way that you can support this show. I have the hiccups, and that's awkward on a live podcast. you can support the show by becoming a Patreon, a patron on Patreon. Sorry. We would like to give a shout out to Josiah?
That's how I pronounce that.
That's how I would pronounce it. Josiah, we really appreciate it. Every patron means the world to us. Like, when we get those notifications, it really does mean a lot. It brightens up our day. It means that we're doing something right and that we're doing something that you guys find worthwhile. And it's really helpful for us to, as a, that group is so easy to get a hold of and give us feedback. And it really helps us improve the show. The funds really do go into making it so we can do more. So yeah, thank you so much for that. I have a special shout out to a listener named Francis, who actually went and donated to the podcast so that we could. Michael's headset broke, and we're gonna get him a new one. It actually came in today, so we're really excited about it, and we just want to say thank you so much to Francis for that special donation. Also, he pointed out the donation button was actually broken on the website, which is why we stopped getting them probably. And I have since fixed that donation button. So thank you so much for pointing that out. He's like, hey, I'm trying to donate to this, but your button doesn't work. What do you mean it doesn't work? He's like, well, it just takes me to PayPal. Oh, that's awkward.
Well, you know, good to know.
Just a link to paypal.com. But yeah, it's fixed now. So when you click it, it will let you donate directly to the podcast. So thank you so much for that. Becoming a patron, though, actually gives you access to some cool benefits, one of which is the Patreon question, for a Patreon participation segment. And This week we have a really good question, in my opinion, but it's also directed at me, so that might be why I like it. It says, how do you schedule time for always improving and content creation while still leading a busy life? I'm particularly interested in Spencer's experience balancing work, family, and magic. Michael, why don't you go first on this one? How do you make time to always improve and do content creation?
Sure. I mean, I think ultimately the answer is always about finding balance, right? But I like to think that improving and, you know, that kind of stuff has to come first, because otherwise I don't know that what I'm saying is worth listening to. And ultimately, on some level, like, I think the idea that you can be making good content without being good, at least on some level, is something that I would imagine a lot of people who spend a lot of time creating content struggle with. But I like to think that personally, I try to make sure to put improving myself first with the idea that it will inherently lead to better content. I know that doesn't answer the full question, but if you want to focus on other parts of it, that's about all I can really say.
So for me, this often can be a struggle. There's a podcast that I really love. It's called Startup. The first season is actually being turned into a TV show on ABC. It's a really good podcast. And it's the journey of a entrepreneur through his, you know, getting, you know, starting a startup business, trying to get capital funding, and just kind of creating the business. And one of the episodes, he goes to a CEO coach and they talk to him about, you know, some of the things that he's good at. And one of the things that they say on that episode is that you kind of get to pick what you're good at. But people often lie to themselves. They'll say, since becoming busier, I've just gotten better at managing time, when the truth is that you actually just get worse at your job. And that's very, very true. Through the things that I've decided to do with my life right now, I've gotten worse at Magic the Gathering. That's just a fact. I'm worse at Magic the Gathering than I was when I was playing Magic the Gathering, you know, 40 hours a week, right? Like, I just am. I'm worse. And that's okay. I'm maintaining a level of Magic that I'm pretty happy with. I want to always be trying to improve. But I'm improving at a lot of things still, right? You know, starting a new job, becoming a dad. There are things that I am getting better at. Time management is one of them. But I think that one of the things that is really, really important that I would really like to highlight is being honest and open with your partner about the time that you're spending doing what you're doing. If you're in a relationship, is really important. I think that being honest with yourself about the time that it's going to take you to do things. So, for example, as many people know, I'm really, really bad about Patreon stuff, like getting, you know, posting certain things that have been promised, doing a stream that was promised. Like, I actually just don't have time to do it. So I prioritize the things that are important, like posting deck lists when I have deck lists available in the Constructive Critics group, doing playtesting with the people that set up playtesting with me. You know, I do the things that I know are important to our listeners, rather than some of the littler things that probably aren't as important. And you have to just cut things that aren't as important in your life. And I think that it's really hard. Like, it really is. If it was easy, everybody would do it. I don't have a lot of free time. Like, to be completely honest, running two podcasts and a website and the things that I do is basically another full-time job. But because, like Michael said, improving and playing Magic is part of this job. Like, if I'm not playing Magic, I don't deliver good content. And my wife knows that, and she lets me play Magic. But I don't think that I could do that without a supportive wife and without a really great job, for one, you know, that lets me take time off to do. This Thursday, we're going to be doing a draft camp with people to help Michael, Danny, and Alex, and Aaron Marnaka qualify for play at the Pro Tour. Like, I put myself in situations where I can do that, but none of it would be possible without my partner. So Devonair really deserves all the credit for the content and the Magic and things like that. So.
Yeah, I think that's a good answer to a really tough question. I mean, asking how to prioritize things and manage your time. I mean, that's something that I think literally everyone struggles with, no matter what they care about or how good they are in it, right?
It's like a really crappy answer, but make a Google Calendar and block out the time that you want to block out for things. Like, it works. There's a reason that day planners existed for years and years and years, right? And there's a reason that Google added that functionality into their product. Like, go make a Google Calendar. Like, it really does work. So, thank you so much for the question. We really appreciate it. Let's move on to hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is the point of the podcast. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. We want to be doing what we can all the time to be constantly always improving. You know, it's not easy to play as much Magic as sometimes is required of you. But, you know, thinking about Magic, doing things around Magic can oftentimes help with this. And doing things in your real life can also, you know, translate over. Michael, you, though, did a lot of drafts today.
Yeah, I drafted 3 times already, which is a number. So I made the finals in one, I won one, and now I haven't actually played out the matches yet in the last one. But just trying to... The more I've played high-level events, the more I feel like constructed you can kind of learn through, or at least for me, I don't know if this is true for everyone, but for me, I feel like I can sort of learn constructed through osmosis almost. Like, talking to people about matchups, watching matchups play out a few times, I feel like I can get to a way higher level in constructed a lot faster than I can in limited. And I guess I would say recognizing my... just the pace at which I have to learn in limited and thinking about, you know, what has made me feel comfortable in formats before and realizing that it's mostly just volume.
Right.
So just plugging away at it, trying to get comfortable and feel like I know, I want to know when I'm happy with the lane that I'm sliding into. I don't know if that makes sense, but especially when you're drafting with very good players, you'll start kind of getting slid into a deck as you're reading signals, right? So you'll be like midway, most of the way through pack one, and you start sort of realizing what's there, what you've been past, where this is leading, and you have to then sort of make a decision, right? Okay, am I trying to just cut one color really hard and branch out from where I am? Or is this going well? And I think just like if you can get to a point where you can see a deck developing as it's happening and know, okay, is this good enough? You have a way better chance of both building playable decks, but also not torpedoing yourself, jumping out of perfectly fine decks just because they're not insane.
Yeah, I like it. I think that a few things that you kind of touched on there is like understanding how you learn is really important and like what you like. We give a lot of advice in this podcast, but like, it's really important to know that everybody's different and they need and to learn at different speeds, different rates and in different ways. And so what works for us might not work for you, but we might have heard of things that we might talk about on this podcast that work for other people that you might find successful yourself. And it's important to know that about yourself when you're going into, you know, playtesting or learnings, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think ultimately, just you have to find what works for you on some level. And I think when you start getting to that space, at least for me, I just feel so much more comfortable. I feel so much less stressed out about the process, and I can enjoy it a little bit more. And that's really ultimately the goal, right?
Yeah. So for me, I spent a lot of this week in my Magic playing time actually with some of our patrons. Who paid $25 or more per month to get playtesting time. So I got a playtest with Ryan and Adrian, two of our patrons. And there were some really good moments in that that were really helpful for me. One of the things that I really like about playtesting with the patrons is having to articulate what I'm thinking and like why I think they need to do certain things. So both of them had really great moments of this. One of them was with Ryan when he wanted to mulligan a hand that I thought was pretty good with blue-red control. So we kind of talked about like what to look for in a hand, why you would keep certain hands game one versus game two, you know, and then also like just drew a bunch of hands together and kind of talked about hands, just the two of us, and like broke down like why we would keep them, why we wouldn't keep them, things like that. It was really good, I think. And then Adrian had an interesting moment as well, where, you know, I felt like he had really figured out a matchup or two and like how to play his deck. And one of the things that Adrian was saying is that sometimes he might doubt himself, or he plays worse in matchups that are good for him versus bad. Like, he'll play better in matchups that are bad for him than good for him. And I kind of explained to him, like, that's pretty natural for everybody to actually play worse when you feel ahead, because you don't feel like you're thinking about your lines as much, and you're not. And, you know, kind of discussing that with him was really interesting. And also just letting him know, like, that he should be confident in his in the way he's playing the deck rather than worrying. It's there's human nature in so much of Magic, right? Like, just that example of Adrian's, where you know, I play worse when I'm ahead. It's like, yeah, because you naturally start thinking less, and now that you've recognized that, now the next step is to go and combat that. And those are interesting moments to have to try and articulate those to those people, and I actually think it really helped me as a player as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I always think a lot of playing matchups that seem good, playing them worse, I definitely can relate to that on some level. I think it's, at least for me, it often, when I catch myself doing that, it's a lot of time it comes from a fear of losing a good matchup, and I will just play very passively rather than playing aggressively and trying to win. And the easiest place to spot this, I think, and to kind of nip it in the bud, is in mulliganing. I'm sure this, but I have a big tendency that, you know, is something I actively work on to keep very mediocre to bad hands when I know my opponent is playing and think the matchup is good. Whereas when you think the matchup is bad, a lot of the time you're mulliganing more aggressively and you're really giving yourself a chance to hit the kind of hands that can win those games.
Right.
And it's really hard to get your head around that sometimes, but
I think it's so easy to think, well, this matchup is great, like all my cards are good in this matchup, so I just need to draw a couple of cards, right? When it's like,
but you have a chance to draw six new ones for free, right?
Right, exactly.
Like, it's kind of going back to this mulliganing being an opportunity versus a cost thing.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It's the chance to basically tormenting voice your whole hand.
Exactly. It's
pretty powerful, yeah.
It's a free... That is the best explanation I've ever heard of a mulligan.
I mean, you just get to Wheel of Fortune. You know, you draw one less, but like, if the matchup is good, that should maybe make you more inclined, not less inclined to mulligan.
Wow. I never heard somebody explain it that way. Did you read that somewhere?
No, it's the kind of thing that becomes clear to you at some point, right? Like, you eventually kind of realize what you're doing. But just...
I mean,
we
preach on this podcast that maybe we don't say it enough. I know I say it a lot to people that play with us at Oasis, but like, mulliganing is the opportunity you get to increase your win percentage before the game starts. Like, it's just something you have to remember.
You have to remove the correlation versus causation part of it, right? Because you will lose more in games you're mulliganing, but you're not losing because you're mulliganing. You're losing because your first hand was already bad, so that hand was just already going to lose.
Right. Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. Let's move on. So, because of the nature of this week, there's no power rankings this week. There's no card of the week. Card of the week, it will be card of the month probably next week. I think there's an SCG. So we'll actually be giving out some cards next week. You can be eligible for that by becoming a patron of $3 or more per month. We give out a card of the month once a month. One of the biggest pieces of feedback we got is they wanted better cards. To do that, you know, we wanted to make sure that we had the funds to do that between, and we'll probably make it a goal to give out card of the week again on Patreon. We just have to find out what the cost is and associated with that and things like that. But yeah, if you want to, win that card of the month, Patreon, $3 or more per month, everything is appreciated. So, but we are going to go straight to our training grounds this week. There's no results to talk about, really. And we have our set review. We have some sad news. So, this has never happened on this show ever. We've done, I think, six of these, where we do a top 20, top 25 cards of the set. I don't mean to be negative, but Hour of Devastation is really bad. It's like a really bad set. And when we looked at top 20s, we actually had a hard time making them without including like some real stinkers. And
well, so I mean, what I would say is this. When we looked at top 20, we could either make a lot of really speculative picks.
Or say a lot of negative things about the cards.
Well, or kind of do the opposite, right? If we're going to go to the standard of, at some point, a deck in standard will play this as a 1-2 of, probably, and it will be a very mediocre role player.
That's what my list was full of.
Right, like, and it's like, either way, we're either just going out on a limb and kind of throwing it at the wall and hoping it sticks, or we're doing exactly the opposite, right? Which is like, you know, yes, we can all see that Shock is a, you know, a card that will probably be played as at least a one up in a deck at some point, right? But it's
sure.
It's not very interesting.
Sure. So it looks like we actually don't have the updated list in the show notes. You have the one updated with your picks, right, Michael?
Let's use the one that Mason put together.
Okay. Okay, let's start at number 10 then. We have coming in at number 10. Let's explain how this works. So, unless it's already on the screen, that's awkward. I don't know. So the way that it works is we let our patrons submit list of cards that they have ranked 1 through 20. There's a giant spider literally right in front of me.
Would you say it has reach?
It is literally the biggest spider that I've ever seen.
So
it's not a tarantula, so it's not the biggest, but it's like... All right, well, that happened. That happened live. So the way that it works is the listeners submit their top 20 cards, and then we give them points like an AP poll. So 20 gets 1 point, 19 gets 2 points, all the way to 20 getting 20 points. And then we put all those points together, and they get their rankings. So coming in at number 10... we have Nimble Obstructionist.
Yeah, so Nimble Obstructionist is 2 and a blue for a 3/1 flash flying. It also has cycling for 2 and a blue, and when you cycle it, you counter a target activated or triggered ability you don't control.
Yeah, so I've heard modern implications for this card, Michael. Let's kind of start there. Do you think this has any place in modern?
It could. It's a little bit expensive. I'm uncertain how realistic hitting, you know, 2 and a blue to cycle this really is in the early game when this kind of effect is most powerful. Still, we've seen a lot of these sort of, I mean, not quite hate bears, but like, I think of these as things that can be hit with a collected company that have some kind of ability that is relevant.
The problem is that this one's ability isn't relevant off of the collected company, though.
Right. So that's true, but it can still keep your creature count higher in that style of deck, right? And a 3/1 flying is like actually real, especially in a deck that's probably playing Noble Hierarch style stuff.
That's true too. That is actually where I see this card maybe making an impact, is kind of that style of deck more so than some of the other stuff. I do think that it likely won't make it into Legacy.
I think just a little too clunky in general. Yeah. 3 is like a really big number in that format.
Yeah. As far as standard goes, though, I really do like this. I think that it has like the perfect power level to become a 3/4 in a standard deck. You know, Blue-White Flash is already really close right now. I think this fits really perfectly into that.
Yeah, that's possible. I think how good this card specifically ends up being is probably pretty dependent on how good Walking Ballista is.
Yes.
I don't know that we can play 3 drops that are just dying to, you know, a counter off Walking Ballista if that's very good.
Not only that, but like one of the arguments that I always had with Walking Ballista was when people were like when they're like, oh, that's gonna kill your 2-drop. I'm like, okay, but they traded 2 mana for 2 mana, right? But like when it's killing your 3-drop, that's actually a big deal.
Right. Well, the bigger problem, too, is just...
And you can't flash it in, either.
It becomes a progressively more problematic thing as the game goes on, right? And these decks typically aren't ending the game especially quickly. So your opponent is most likely, at some point, you know, if you play two matches against the deck playing Walking Ballista, they're going to have four or five mana at a Walking Ballista at the same point in time at least once, right? And I think that maybe just puts a little bit of a ceiling on how good this card could really be in Standard. But again, it's obviously difficult to say. If the cycling part is good, if that ends up being relevant for whatever reason, then I think the card is going to end up being pretty powerful. If you were getting an uncounterable effect like that, and it is actually, you know, worth some portion of a card.
Right, and then you're getting a card too, right?
Right, so exactly. I mean, that being uncounterable and having a 3-1 flyer as the split part of that. What I'm basically saying is I don't think a 3-1 flash flyer for 3 is especially good. But if that's the backup half of it, if the primary half is the cycle, I think the card could be very good.
Yep. Coming in at number 9, we have Ramnup Excavator. I believe this is the green one, if I'm not mistaken. It's yes. green 2 for the 2/3. Mm-hmm. And then you can play lands from your graveyard.
Yeah, so this one I'm not especially interested in for Standard, but I'm quite interested in this card with Green Sun's in it.
Interesting. Why?
I mean, just it seems like in a Maverick style deck in Legacy, it seems like a pretty solid one of like being able to just like actually basically waste lock your opponent with a single card that you can get as a tutor is pretty powerful.
That actually does seem really powerful. I haven't thought about this with Wasteland in Legacy in specifically a Maverick style deck before. Now that you say that, I actually like this card a lot more. I think that that's a good way to play the card without trying to abuse the card, right? It's like kind of the perfect storm there.
Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure this card takes that much abusing, really, to be like,
well, that's,
you know what
that's,
I mean?
Yes, that's the thing that I really like is like, this is a value card to me, and I was trying to find where to get the value. Whereas most people see this and they're like, I want to break this. And it's like, when you think about things like, you know, Courser of Krufix, right? You didn't need to break it. Like, it was good.
Well, this card is obviously much more narrow than something like Courser of Krufix, right?
It is, but I think that it tells a similar story, in the sense that like you the real thing that you want with this is just to gain equity throughout the game. I still wonder how big a 2/3 is, if it's big enough. I know the ability is like more powerful than Courser of Krufix, like, which is why it's more narrow, right? I don't know.
Yeah. I struggle with this one in Standard and probably Modern too. I mean, maybe the problem is that I would want to play, if I'm going to play more than one, I would want to be playing a bunch of lands I could get back. And like, I don't know really how many Ghost Quarters and Tech Edges you'd want to play, or if this guy could fit in a Hate Bear style deck. It's possible, but 3's a lot.
Also, that's a lot of mana. Like, between everything,
yeah.
Like maybe Ghost Quarter's more realistic.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty sweet with Green Sun Zenith. I'm actually pretty interested to give that a try. Like, if you only have to play one in the deck, and we're playing Wastelands, obviously, anyways, I think just having the ability to be like, oh, you have all non-basic lands.
All right, you know, it's
Suns for 3.
This is our set review, and I have to be really, really wrong about one card. So let's go on to our next one. We have Claim to Fame. And let me tell you Claim to Fame. It's right now, people talking about it, and then it's done. I think it will see basically zero real play after the first 6 months.
That is possible. It is narrow.
Like,
problematic with narrow.
So I've thought a lot about like Grixis deck that it already fits into, and my thing is like, yeah, I can see this, but like, what am I cutting is like my real question. And is this providing enough value for that? Because what you're really looking for is to just get the claim part of this in your deck, right? And am I gonna cut a Kolaghan's Command for this? I don't think so.
It would, the deck would have to change.
But like,
and I don't know that discard is good enough to make the deck change. I feel like it would be more like, you can do some cute things with like this and Jace and Snapcaster, but it's so hard to have the requisite creature count and like loot effect style count for this to really
be good. I mean, it's powerful, right?
Like you can
I see
see
what
it.
They're
you
trying just, to do, but it's yeah. just, it seems, I mean, it seems not good enough for me. Like, it's a, like, it's a it's sorcery. Just it's just, yeah, it, I get it. I get how powerful it is. But I also know that there's a cost to this. And, like, the cost of playing a Kolaghan's Command or a cantrip effect is basically zero. Like, those just go in those decks because that's
so
what the decks want to do.
If Unearth was modern legal, how many of those would you play in any deck?
Like,
nothing really comes to mind as something that really wants an Unearth effect. I'm almost certain that Unearth is basically strictly better than this card. I'm pretty sure that when you're looking at cards with that
so
sort
Unearth,
of...
Unearth is the one black, the one... like, let me just read it really quick.
It might be three or less, but it's effectively the same.
So Unearth is one black, choose target creature in your graveyard with total casting cost three or less, and put the card into play, cycling two.
Right. So the question, I mean, I'm going to say two and three are the same. That's not a strike against this card.
Yes, I would say.
I can't think of any threes.
This card. The thing is I don't even think this is as good as Unearth.
That's what I'm saying. I think
cycling is better than the fame part. Yeah.
And I'm not sure that there's a deck that is screaming for Unearths.
Yeah. I don't think this is gonna see play, guys. Like I think it will see play. Let me rephrase that. I think it will see play. I think it will top eight some tournaments, and I think that people will slowly start cutting them because they're not worth it.
I think you just have to build the deck differently. You would be looking at like Jace Vin's Prodigy as a four of, and then like maxing Thought Scours and Snapcaster Mages.
And then the format just becomes a Lightning Bolt format again.
I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Or maybe a Path format? I don't know. But like, I feel like the format will adjust to this card really easily.
I would want to play this with both Tarmogoyf and Thought Scour and Jace Vin's Prodigy.
Yes.
And then it feels like, I don't know that that's a deck you can actually build, but that's about what the level of targets. If I had Death Shadow, Tarmogoyf, Jace, and Snapcaster, that might push me over the line. I don't know.
Let's go to the card that I was wrong about before the set review, and that is Beneath the Sands, if I'm not mistaken. So this card is two and a green for a sorcery. You may search your library for a basic land card, put it on the battlefield tap, and then shuffle your library. And then it has cycling for two. Michael, I'm going to let you go first on this one.
So that we can disagree in peace?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't think three mana rampant growth is very good. No matter what we tack on to the end.
Except for, like, you know, put another land in your hand.
Yeah, I mean, Nissa's Pilgrimage was, like, comparing this to Nissa's Pilgrimage is this.
Or Cultivate or Kul'Damas Reach.
Sure, yeah. I think that part of the ability is, you know.
Yeah, having it be Green Divination, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this card was spoiled. I tweeted out, I was like, this is not good enough. Like, I think I might have said, like, Wizards, stop trying to give me three mana Rampant Growth. I'm never going to play them. And then I played with this card, and I think I was wrong. I think Cycling 2 actually is the worst ability you can put on this card to make it playable. I think you found the line. The actual line. This is it. I'm not saying this is great, but I think you found the line. I think this is the first playable of this effect outside of like a Kul'Damas Reach. So yeah. it's playable. It will be a 4 of in a standard deck. I know that multiple people have tested it. They've reported back to me the same findings I have, that they were pleasantly surprised.
That the worst card in their deck that they're pretty sure they're not cutting is this one.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a, like, you if you play it, you're playing 4 of it. Here's the thing. Yeah. Is that first I was like, I just need 2 more ramp effects. I guess I'll try this out. And then I played it and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm wrong. Put 2 more in. This deck is different now. And I'm not saying the card is great, because it's not, but it's the best ramp spell they've given us at a similar casting cost, you know, since Pilgrimage. So, and they've tried to give us a lot.
Yeah, it's just
like really a lot.
It's really tough. I mean, this is Pilgrimage I felt like was balanced but very good. Pretty much all the 3 mana ramp spells since then have been pretty abysmal.
Yeah. So the reason that this card becomes playable is specifically that it's actually been better than in the late game than something like a Pilgrimage, right? That card was still dead. And this card isn't.
Right. It also, it depends on exactly what you're trying to ramp to, right? In a format where we were always trying to cast Emrakul, there was something to be said for just like literally getting all the forests out of your deck.
Right. And the card advantage was real with things like Chandra, where you could play it, itself, and still minus and draw the card plus one.
Well, and that effect is so much better than this on turn 3, right? I mean, just even if it's just the one extra
land. It's a million times better, right? So they kind of even out on that, right? Where this is better late, that's better early. You have to make some sacrifices. I mean, people played Map the Waste, and I thought that card was like one of the worst cards ever. This card's way better than Map the Waste, so.
That's sort of a damning statement of praise, honestly.
Hashtag better than Map the Waste. Let's go on to our next card. Coming in at number 6, we have Hour of Revelation. This card, getting all the hype, brah. It's getting all the hype. It's white. Is it white?
White, 3, and then it costs 3 less to play if there are 10 or more non-land permanents on the battlefield. So not just under your control, but under anyone's control.
And then it's destroy all non-land permanents. Okay. I want to be very clear about something. The best removal spells in white right now are Cast Out and...
Cast Out and Stasis Snare, right? So some tension.
There's some real tension here. So when everybody's like, yeah, you just play Blue Eye Control because now you have this card, I'm like, weren't you playing 4 Cast Out before? I feel like this is a nombo.
Right, so it definitely doesn't work in that exact style of deck. Right. That's just something that's happening, and you can't really play a bunch of cast outs with this. That being said, you know, the destroy all non-land permanents thing is pretty powerful, right? We've had this exact card before, basically, without any cost reduction clause, and it was very playable.
It was a 1 of in a control deck.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a card that.
Yeah. I want to be clear that the hype train of Planar Cleansing is a little bit high, guys. It was a 1 of in a control deck. There's lots of 1 ofs in control decks. It's a powerful effect that the deck probably needed, but let's not go out and jam 4 of these into all of our white control decks because that's not what the card is. It's a card. That you sift through your deck through with draw spells, dig spells, and then you find it at the point you need it in the game. You make sure that you get to it, and then you cast it and swing back, right? And like, and then the tempo swings into your way. You're in control of the game, but it's not what people are going ham on Twitter about. Like, it's just not. It's really good. Yeah, I think this card will see play.
It's going to get cast, and it's going to read you win the game or, you know, you lose the game depending on who's casting it most every time it's ever cast, right? I mean,
because the
game is very hard to beat this kind of effect. But there's real deck building costs, and like you said, the second Hour of Revelation is typically a lot worse than the first one.
Yeah. And the other thing to think about here is the only manlands in that format were Mutavault. And this format has a lot of man lands. So paying 6 mana to wipe the board is a huge cost in a format with that many man lands. Just kind of something.
Right. Alternatively, you might be able to build a deck that plays a bunch of man lands. And right, that can be an advantage or a disadvantage.
Sure, that's true too. What do we have next? Coming in at number 5, we have Hour of Promise. This card is 4 and a green. You can search your library for up to 2 land cards, put them onto the battlefield tapped, and shuffle your library. Then, if you control 2 or more deserts, create a 2/2 black zombie creature tokens. Michael, why don't you go first?
I mean, this is an interesting ramp spell. They don't usually print them like this. Not having a basic land stipulation, plus having a pretty relevant upside for hitting the third desert. So, like, if you have a desert in play, this can make 2/2s. It can also, get 2 Shrine of the Forsaken Gods. You can get a Shrine of the Forsaken Gods and a Sanctum of Ugin. If you have 2 deserts already, you can get a desert and a shrine or a desert and a sanctum. This is like an oddly flexible ramp spell. They almost never print ramp spells that work like this.
Yeah, I've actually probably already played 60 games with this card. This is the best ramp spell they've printed since Primeval Titan. The way that the gameplay typically works out for the card is you look at your hand, and you play enough deserts that you can typically have 1 in play. And then if you don't, then you always go get 2 shrines anyway, right? But typically you have a desert in play, or you don't and you go get 2 shrines, or you have 2 deserts in play. And so often you just look at your hand and what is the amount of mana I need next turn and how many deserts do I have in play? And then you construct your next Hour of Promise or this Hour of Promise to do exactly what you want. And it's just it's so easy. Because it's so flexible in the lands you get, and because they made on-color deserts that come into play untapped and tapped for your mana, it's just so easy. I've made a lot of 2/2s. I've ramped to 10 a lot.
It's a good ramp spell. And it's almost a modal spell.
Yes, that's how it feels.
I mean, not quite, but it's close.
And honestly, it might be the reason that you're happy with Beneath the Sands. It might be the entire reason. Going, Beneath the Sands, this, make 2/2s, World Breaker is,
Yeah, it takes a lot.
It's like, how were you going to beat this? What was your plan?
No, and I mean, one of the downfalls of, explosive vegetation-style spells in the past has always been that, especially the second one is awful. Right. I mean, here, the second one actually is probably better than the first one.
Often, yeah. I mean, unless you have the Ulamog after the first one.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, if you just get to clean up and win the game, then yeah, that's, we're good. But the fact that the second one actually has text in terms of being able to, get a utility land of some sort and then also get you 2/2s.
Yeah.
It's just, it has a lot of modes, and I think, you talked to me about this before, but the fact that the on-color untapped deserts also produce colorless and can be sacrificed to Worldbreaker.
They don't have to be sacrificed, actually.
Well, but, sure, but
they can activate for the sacrifice.
Right. So there's a lot of little things that make this card...
It just kind of added up, which is so weird, right? None of these cards were meant to be played together, and yet they add up to, what you want.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's just...
Because this card was supposed to be played with, Sandworm Convergence or something, right? And instead, you're playing Ulamogs and Worldbreakers with it.
Right, but I think the fact that... I think flexibility on a ramp spell is just such an unusual thing that this card is a little bit hard to rate because there's nothing very good to compare it to. There aren't really modal ramp spells. It just isn't a thing.
One thing to also think about with this card is the decks that want to search for 2 land type, any land type, that want to be ramping, things like blue-red, blue-green, Candelabra in Legacy, they might actually prefer this to something like Primeval Titan, because it's actually easier for them to get up to five and not have double green than it is to get to the Primeval Titan mana, which is something you might see taking some spots.
Interesting.
In 12 posts in Legacy. Or just be another one, right? Like,
sure. I'm excited to give this card a little bit of a try in Standard. It feels like the kind of card that I could imagine a metagame where this card isn't good, but this card is very powerful.
Yeah.
It's not lacking on the power part of it.
Yeah. And I think that, as we'll see, the top five cards in this set really make up its power. Coming in at number four, we have Nicol Bolas. This is the only card that I lost to Sealed at my Midnight pre-release. A Braid is on the screen, but I'm pretty sure Nicol Bolas is next. Four, a blue, and a black, and a red. So it's seven mana for a Planeswalker Bullets. It comes in with seven loyalty. Target opponent exiles cards from the top of his or her library.
Go ahead. Basically, you cascade from their deck for plus two.
Yes.
They exile two cards for plus one. So you have they cascade, better Mind Rot, minus four, it deals seven to them or to a creature they control, and minus 12. I don't know when we're getting to that, but your opponent's exile online permanent, so they probably concede.
Yeah.
Like every Planeswalker Ultimate, your opponent basically loses the game.
Yeah, so I was a little doubtful about this card until I played against it in Sealed, and then I thought about it, and I actually don't know how you kill this once it's in play.
Yes, that is the thing. Because this can go to nine and protect itself, or if there isn't a board, it just exiles two cards.
Yeah.
It is always at least a 3-for-1 if it resolves, because, right, like, their best case scenario if it resolves is, like, you plus it, they exile cards, they cast it out or something, right? That is the best, so it's a 3-for-1 best case for them if it resolves. And the secret is that if you plus two it or plus one it, like, what, your opponent... How often does your opponent have nine power in play?
Right, you were already losing the game if they had nine power in play when you cast the seven mana spell.
You need to cast Wrath of God, right? Not
right.
Nicol Bolas. But, like, much in the way that a card like Ugin protects itself, I mean, or Karn, right? How often can your opponent actually kill Karn if you plus it? I mean,
right.
Sometimes, but not often. And this one is obviously impacting the board much more dramatically. When you plus it, like getting a card off their deck, depending on what they're playing, your opponent isn't going to live very long getting mind rotted every turn by an 8 loyalty Planeswalker.
At first, I was like not impressed with this card. And here's the thing, is those two cards in their hand, they're going to be like the last two cards in their hand, right?
Like,
and so you're just like, okay, like go to top deck mode, bro. Honestly, I'm impressed. Like, I thought that this card wouldn't be playable, and then I, like, played against it and limited it, and I was, like, trying to devise a time where I could actually kill this if it resolved against me in Constructed.
You just can.
Like...
In Constructed, maybe. In Limited, never.
Well, that's the thing, is there's, like, I will never beat this card in Limited. What does that mean of it in Constructed? And I was, like... So, like, they have a Gideon. It comes down, it kills Gideon. They have... Like, kill your Gideon, gain a bunch of life is, like... an ability that I would pay mana for, which
well,
is like this
that's
worst
like
case
the
scenario.
Basement. That is the basement.
Right.
So much of the time, you're going to be like, okay, I can actually plus this because my opponent's Gideon can't kill it even with the Knight. It only attacks for seven, plus it to eight, untap, wipe all your permanents or whatever, like cascade. I think if this is ending up in play, it's pretty bad.
I think it's like a nice 2-of finisher in some control deck. Can we, while we're reading this, can we just read Cruel what is it called?
Dark Intimations.
Is it dark?
It puts an extra counter on it. So.
Okay. So
it can ultimate
turn
sooner.
So the card that we're talking about is from Aether Revolt. is two, a blue, a black, and a red for a sorcery, so five mana. Each opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker, then discards a card, and you return a creature or planeswalker from your graveyard to your hand, then draw a card. So a lot of things. Then when you cast Nicol Bolas Planeswalker, exile this, and that planeswalker enters the battlefield with one more counter. Okay, is this something that you're willing to play as like a two of and a tap out Grixis control deck if you're playing Nicol Bolas?
No, I don't think it's that far off. I think that card is like okay just on rate. I mean, I've played that card in Limited before. It was like pretty good in Aether Revolt Limited. I don't think that putting extra counters on your Nicol Bolas matters, frankly.
Yeah.
Like at all.
So here's my opinion. The first is that I think this is telling us a story. So they printed the two mana, look at your top three cards, put two into your yard, one into your hand. Strategic Planning, I think is the name of the card.
Sure.
If you're playing like a tap out style control deck with like Hour of Devastation, Sweltering Suns as like wrath effects, and then, you know, tap out removal spells, I actually do wonder if this is legitimately good in that deck. Because you can, like, put your Bolas into the graveyard and then just get it back later with this.
Maybe. I don't know that Dark Intimations is really quite
good. I don't know either. I'm just thinking.
But thinking aloud. I do like Nicol Bolas in tap-out cell decks. I've seen it paired a bunch with Chandra Torture Defiance recently, where people would be playing, like, two Nicol Bolas, four Chandra. With the idea that you can just cast Chandra on curve and then ramp out the Nicol Bolas, which makes a lot of sense to me. Like, I don't think your opponents are typically going to beat an accelerated Nicol Bolas, especially out of a control shell where you actually have, you know, removal and counter spells and stuff to back it up.
Right. Okay. Well, that was just a thought. Thought we would cover that because I think that's a question that.
Yeah, definitely worth talking about, and could certainly be wrong.
I don't know. I don't
close.
I don't know the answer to the question. It's close to good enough
just on... What I would say is I don't think putting the extra counter on Nicol Bolas matters, but the card might just be good enough anyways, or close.
Up next, we have a Braid. This card is one and a red for an instant. Deal 3 damage to target creature or destroy target artifact. You get to pick one. It's likely the best card in the set, which is sad.
It's a really good card. It's really flexible. It's interesting. I think having talked to Matt about this card a fair bit and then played against him with a couple of decks playing this card, the main thing it does is it really makes Heart of Kirin less effective as a sort of Thalia effect, almost. Because one of the ways that good Mardu players were able to get a lot out of their hearts before was to force you to keep holding up mana. And this card is really cool in that it's a creature removal spell that also just kills Heart of Kirin.
Right. I also think that this is important that it kills both the Winding Constrictor and it kills Virtus Gearhulk. So, you know, being able to kind of double down on like multiple decks with an effect that you're pretty okay with playing is really important. Especially like when the oftentimes the problem that you would have is you would build your deck in a way that was like you could pick a lane against that deck. The other considerations obviously are there has been a lot of talk about decks like Colossus becoming playable now that Marvel is gone, and I actually don't see a world in which a Braid and Colossus it coexist together, because if I pay 4 mana for a Hedron Archive and it gets a Braided, I'm like probably 100% to lose.
I mean, I think you could go beyond probably. You're just actually 100% to lose, right?
Right.
I don't say you're supposed to. Yeah. I don't know how you're supposed to actually beat that.
So a braid fills a really interesting role in the format, and that I think it's good against a lot of decks. And you wouldn't typically get that of a 2-mana red instant, I feel like. I mean, when it's making you considering how many Harness Lightnings versus it you're supposed to play, when Harness Lightning is basically Doomblade, you know the card's pretty good. So, coming in at number 2, we have Supreme Will. This card is really, really interesting in my opinion, and it is blue and 2 for an instant. Choose 1. Counter target spell unless its controller pays 3, or look at the top 4 cards of your library, put one of them to either your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. I think this card is really good. I don't see this card not being a 2 or a 3 of in the blue-red control deck that currently exists. I also think that blue-red got literally the most cards from this set of any existing deck.
By all of the cards that are playable. probably 4 versus mostly none.
Yeah. I think that you were already playing 5 3-mana counter spells, and I think that you might be willing to go to 6 because of this one and cutting some of the other ones, including this one, cutting something else. I think that having the utility to do either or off of a Torrential Gearhulk is really powerful. And also, one of the things that's really annoying for a control player is they'll leave up mana to counter your spell, and the way you beat that is just by not playing anything sometimes and kind of time walking them. And this makes it so that when they say, "Hey, go to my end step," you're like, "Hey, Supreme Will, all impulse."
Right. I think, yeah, just modal spells are really good, and this one isn't. And it's like, Mana Leak was great, right? Mana Leak is just actually a great magic card.
And Spell Shrivel has been a 4 of in decks that have copied SVGs, right?
Like, I mean, frankly, this card is, it's not Mana Leak, but is it actually worse than Spell Shrivel appreciably? No, not really. I mean, the fact that even the counter spell half of it, how often is that actually worse?
It just doesn't.
Not that often. Yeah. This card's just pretty good.
Yeah.
Again, it's not the most exciting card, but this is like the kind of card you will.
But this is what you get when you set review Hour of Devastation. Yeah. Coming in at number 1, the number 1 card in Hour of Devastation is Hour of Devastation. So this card is red 3 for a sorcery. All creatures lose indestructible until end of turn. Hour of Devastation deals 5 damage to each creature and each non-Bullish Planeswalker. So let's be very clear about what this does. This says, "Shut up Gideon and shut up Avacyn," more than any card I've ever seen.
Actually, Avacyn is probably still okay against this card.
Well, right,
Gideon
Gideon just gets stomped
by this card.
So here's why it's "Shut up Avacyn." Well, you can still just flash an Avacyn after this resolves and have a 4-4 in play. It is not this, it's not the ideal situation for my Avacyn, right?
Yeah. No, it's true. I just mean that I think Avacyn is probably still okay. Gideon, is obviously still okay. It's Gideon. But this card lines up really well against Gideon. There's not really, any way for you to get God.
Yeah. This just does so much. We kind of were talking about the power level of the Planar Chaos effect, right? This does what you really want, right?
It's double red, not triple red, and then it's 1 mana less total, right?
Yeah.
It's the same card for all intents and purposes.
And not only that, but it's so easy to construct a board state with your abrades, with your Harness Lightnings, with your Magma Sprays, whatever you're doing, to just construct a board state where you're like, okay, this is a hard permanent for this card to deal with. This is a hard permanent for me this to deal with. Okay. Cast Hour of Devastation. Sorry that your Selfless Spirit doesn't matter if this is how you wanted to fight me these days, but
Right. Right. No, I mean, this card is really good against a lot of the Planeswalkers, not just Gideon, but it really makes you reconsider what a Planeswalker, it probably makes Nissa a lot worse. 3-mana Nissa.
Yeah.
It's just tough to get above 5.
Well, especially in those boards where you play a Winding Constrictor and then play Nissa minus, right? Like, that's, or play this a plus and then try and play another thing in minus minus. Excuse me, you actually don't have, you actually don't have time to minus minus anymore. That actually doesn't work.
Well, and the thing is that often, like, a single Harness Lightning plus this will blow up an entire any board state, right? Or this followed by a Harness Lightning or number eight or whatever. Like, this just gives you a catch-up card where I don't know that it fits as well with Torrential Gearhulk as maybe it kind of looks like it could, because blue-red doesn't usually struggle a lot with answering things on the stack, just because there are, like, no tap-out spells in the entire deck. But this might be able to spawn a new style of control deck.
To be fair, I played a lot of Jeskai control with Fumigate, and I much prefer having this to Fumigate.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this card's...
Yeah.
It's just almost undeniably.
I think we have a new Wrath Daddy in town, and it's our Devastation, so... that is it for our top 10. Michael, what did you think of the Our Devastation top 10 cards? What do you think of the set overall?
I like 10 in that I actually like basically all of these cards.
Yeah.
Or at least think they're interesting.
Yeah.
Which is not always the case. When you dig a little bit deeper, even in a good set, sometimes the bottom can be, you know, just pretty uninteresting.
Yeah.
So
I thought all of these cards were interesting. I thought they were good conversations.
Yeah, and honestly, going through these 10, there are more cards that I'm interested to play with having gone through them a little bit than I would have said I was interested in before we started. So I guess that's ultimately the goal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to thank all of our patrons who submitted their top 20 cards for this set. We really appreciated it. We hope that we got to talk about some of the cards that you were interested in. We want to remind people that to check out the Patreon, patreon.com/ccmtg, to become a patron of the show. Every dollar that you see fit is really, really appreciated. If you can't go there, leave us a review on iTunes or donate. There's a donation button on the website. There's also swag at the store. We had somebody ask this week if there was a way to get t-shirts or things like that. There actually is. If you just go to constructivecriticism.com, you can get your t-shirt today. So it's super awesome. And then also, if you want the first run of Common Knowledge t-shirts, I can give you the link for that as well. We can put it in the show notes. You can get your Common Knowledge shirt early, rep the podcast right at episode one. They would really appreciate it. All proceeds to the Common Knowledge t-shirts will actually go to helping these guys with equipment and stuff like that. So, let's wrap this up. Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Handrocker. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find me every week on Limited Time Only and Constructive Criticism. You can find the show at CCMTG on Twitter, Constructive Criticism on Facebook. You can also listen to it on the Mana Base, mtgcast.com, constructivecriticism.com, twitch.tv/ccmtg, and Constructed. And then the Constructive Criticism YouTube channel. You can join the conversation by joining the Discord channel. It's a channel open to everybody. You can also join the Constructive Criticism family, which you just ask for an ad and we'll add you to it. You can join the clan on MTGO by messaging me at Spencer13H. I just bought a bunch of Popper decks on MTGO, so I'll be on there playing Popper. That's true. I actually already play Popper a lot. I'll also be testing for the IPTQ and helping these guys for the purchase. I'll be on there a little bit more often. So message me at Spencer13Dev on MTGO. And you can also tweet at us with hashtag would that be good. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it, as Michael likes me to say. However, I do have something that I have to say that just happened. So I don't know if the people on the video audience can see this. But there was a picture sent to me of pineapple on a pizza. And I just want to say that Mason publicly apologized for his pineapple on pizza thing. And now he's, you know, stirring the pot a little bit again. And I don't appreciate it, Mason. But let's go right on to hashtag would that be good. Let's see here. Michael, do you have the first one?
Yeah, it looks like Ryan tweeted, only testing Jeskai today because, you know, freedom, but only for me and not for my opponent. And that was on July 4th. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hashtag, would that be good? Hashtag, Verica. Hashtag, control. Hashtag, empathy.
I appreciate all the hashtags. And hashtag, freedom. Freedom! Yeah. Hashtag, freedom. I think Jeskai's great, and I'm glad that you got to play some Jeskai control. TMW, your dad teaches you how to grill, and you save the cookout. LOL. Hashtag, would be good. I'm not gonna lie. I'm an old man. What does TMW mean?
I feel like it's that moment.
There's actually a lot of acronyms for TMW. There's like a lot. So there's Tomorrow, The Man of World, Tell Me Why, Too Much Work, Tactic Missile Wing, 10 Most Wanted.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's not Tactic Missile Wing.
All right. This means war.
I mean, probably not.
Tamworth, New South Wales, Australia. Tamworth airport code. So it's an airport code. Probably not that one. Total Motorcycle Website. True Metal Warrior. The Microsoft Way. If he works at Microsoft, it could be that. The Murder Weapon. It is a band that goes by TMW. The Marketing Workshop in New Zealand. I don't think it's any of those. So it's probably between... wait, none of these are what you said, Mason. All right. I don't know if you can hear Mason, but he's saying it's that moment when. So.
Yeah.
All right. Now we know. Mason says, then doesn't cook the chicken all the way. Hashtag, would that be good? I feel like Andrew and Mason's Twitter drama is becoming a regular part of the show.
Yeah.
You know, and all I got to say to that is, you know, you have to be nice to your friends in public. Anti-shout out to Austin Godels.
Do you?
No, not at all.
Yeah, don't. All right.
Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely don't. Having friends.
Definitely don't. So vote JT, hashtag Dodgers, hashtag would be good. So I got a lot of crap for this one. So I didn't know what this was about. And then he's like, and then Matt was like, you call yourself a sports fan. And I don't watch baseball. Baseball's the worst. Like, the literal worst. I have tried many, many times. I have been more successful at watching Olympic curling than I have baseball.
Well, I mean, it's on less often, so you can kind of, you know, get into it for just the rarity of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everything's on less often than baseball, to be fair. Jason says, my MTGO presence is very little, but I wanted to get two more in, so I'm buying two popper decks, first to get more familiar, and win chests is what it should say. It does say that, actually. I just misread it. And then Common Knowledge responded with get those chests. You can follow Common Knowledge at CK Podcast MTG on Twitter. And also, popper's great, and you should be happy that you bought a popper deck. Mason says, when DJ Catherine and I were talking about going to GP Birmingham, but then you realize it's in England, not the USA.
That happened already, too. I was talking to Matt about, we were looking at what GPs we could hit this year. And yeah, you found that out. Yeah, I was like looking at plane tickets to Birmingham. And then
you're already looking. You know, why not just go to England?
I mean, I'm not the most about EV out of anyone I ever met, but like, that's aggressively terrible EV.
Salt Lake City to Birmingham.
Oh, I just don't want to fly that far for a GP. I don't even care what the price is.
Birmingham, UK. Let's see. They're only $1,500, Michael. Only
$1,500. So top eight, well, probably top four to break even.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. Common Knowledge says, we are excited to bring you a new podcast about getting better at MTG with a focus on hashtag pop or play. Get ready. Hashtag, would that be good? Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that seems good to me.
Are you saying that because you're part of the brand, or do you actually think a pop or podcast sounds sweet?
I don't. know that a power podcast exists. So,
dude, there's one other one right now, and there was a cute moment between their Twitters.
Yeah, but they wanted Manny, so I think they're in trouble.
Oh, throwing shade, talking about Manny. Scotty says, "I have grasped the meaning of the God Pharaoh Manny's word." Oh no, what is happening? Manny is not a pharaoh or a god. You guys, stop it with your cult. Going to the moon. I have now only played Blood Moon decks as decreed. Hashtag would that be good? You Manny worshippers. Main decking two steam vents in an otherwise blue black fairies deck to sideboard seven Blood Moon effects. This is.
I mean, that just actively sounds bad, but like it's gonna cut you off all your spells too. I don't see why this is a good thing.
I mean, he said that it was good and that the salt was his. So, Torment of Hailfire for X equals 8 in Two-Headed Giant. Hashtag, would that be good? Yes. Yes, it would. I bet.
I mean, like on a scale of Ulamog to other things you could do for 10 mana, it's probably not as good as Ulamog, but like.
Really? In Two-Headed Giant?
Oh, it doubles, doesn't it? Oh. Okay, sure. All right. Yeah, I forget that Two-Headed Giant isn't real magic.
Yeah, I think it was as good. I think yeah, it was as good. Yeah, hashtag you did it, Sean. Hashtag doing it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. Michael, what did you learn this week?
I don't know. I'm excited to get back to looking at some of these cards again. I'm less jaded about this set now. So
good. I'm glad. I learned that if you make a ramp spell good enough, Michael becomes interested in ramp. Hashtag
like there's a connection. Yeah, it's like there's a connection between good cards and, you know, wanting to play them.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
Yeah.
Magic, magic, magic.